I'm Mr. Callie. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Tony?
Well, I know you've got a long day. You're going to be going pretty much sun up to midnight today, so thanks so much for starting your day out with us.
Oh, always a pleasure. Anytime.
Hey, we wanted, as a father, I wanted to just let you know that a lot of people are glad that your young child is better. We were following the story in the media, and I know that's a trying time, and it seems like everything has worked out well.
Yeah, we're back on a good path. There's a long trail in front of us on this, but to tell you, it's a good thing to be on the other side of that. It was just a horrible situation, but now she's running around and seems to be doing really well.
She'll be getting into things in no time, back to the normal, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, we walked in the other day, walked into the dining room and found her standing on the kitchen table, so I'll tell you something.
Ready for some more bumps and bruises. Well, let's talk about, we got several things on the agenda. First of all, let's talk about the bridge. I've got a friendly wager with Tim Skubick. When we were on Mackinac Island for the Mackinac Conference, everything that I saw and heard led me to believe that the bridge is going to happen. He thinks that it is not going to happen, and it just seems like the administration yourself putting in a lot of work to lay the foundation, and there are many options that you have to make sure that this bridge gets done. Comment on that.
Well, Tony, you're going to win that. You're going to win that wager with Tim. The reasons behind doing this and the overall benefits to the entire state economically for jobs and the future of exporting businesses, and by the way, we still make a lot of stuff in the state, not just cars, but then also for security reasons and for federal drawdown reasons to get the resources that we need to build roads and bridges all over the state. This isn't about just one bridge. You know, there's 167 other bridges on the MDOT five-year plan that will be the future of which will be secured by this project being done, by how much federal dollars it'll free up to use all over the state. So this is a big project with huge statewide implications for the future of our economy, the future of our infrastructure system, and we can do it in a way where private investment comes in and takes on all the risk and puts up all the money. So we're just in a wonderful position. It's something that I think at the end of the day, that the legislature is going to take us up on.
Why do you think you're getting resistance?
Well, there's a couple of different aspects to it. Some of it is simply misunderstanding because of an ad campaign, a multi-million-dollar ad campaign run by a person who has a monopoly. There's a privately owned bridge in Detroit. They've operated without competition for 83 years.
You're talking about the Maroon family?
This is the Maroon family, the owners of the Ambassador Bridge, and they've operated without competition for 83 years now, and they don't much like the idea of competition, so they're putting up millions of dollars of ads on TV and telling a story that's simply not true. They're telling a story as though taxpayers are going to foot the bill here, and that's an impossibility under our proposal, that this is a private sector proposal where we put it out to bid and let the private sector come in. They want us to give them this new bridge, no bid. Well, we're conservatives. We don't operate in that way. We require competition in everything. And if we're not willing to apply competition to our own proposals, such as this bridge, then we shouldn't be applying competition anywhere. And we just want to be consistent. That's one of the principles that we live by.
Tell us about the One Tough Nerd Committee.
Well, we're working on now shifting gears from the previous campaign effort, which has been geared around how do we tell a message for the administration, what the administration would do for our own general election, into another phase where we're going to try and help tell the story across the state for other people that are like-minded, other folks that are a part of this reinvention process. So we're getting into the same standards, of course. We don't go out and raise money from special interest groups, so be no difference in this, but we will be raising money to help tell a story around the state about how certain senators and representatives have been critically involved in the reinvention of Michigan, and we need to keep this reinvention going.
I recently read by Paul Egan in the Detroit News that a phase out of the personal property tax is the number two tax reform priority after the recent repeal of the Michigan business tax. Talk about that.
Well, the personal property tax is a tax that is essentially levied on equipment each year that employers have in our state. So here's how it works. The more equipment that you put in our state, the more investment you make in our state, the higher your taxes go. That's how our personal property tax system works. And it really doesn't make a lot of sense. It's a disincentive considering what the type of activity we want to see. We put a lot of equipment in our state that usually means that you have employees running that equipment and servicing that equipment. And so what we're trying to do is find alternatives, things that we can phase out of the personal property tax method of funding local government and into something else. So we're in the early stages of formulating what that proposal will be, but I would expect that September, October, in that time frame, we'll have something to unveil that will transition us away from personal property tax and onto something that doesn't disincent the investment that we're trying so hard to earn.
We had Gretchen Whitmer. She was among many folks that we had on the program yesterday that talked about the limits that have been placed on welfare, and they talked about how kids and some single-parent families may really be hurt by this. Talk about this new change to welfare.
Well, we did implement most of the Federal Welfare Reform Act of 1996. So back in 96, President Clinton, by the way, along with, he was working with the Republican Congress at the time, came to a compromise on welfare reform, which implemented lifetime limits of 4 years, but states had to enact it. And our state is one of the really late actors when it comes to this. It was a bipartisan effort before. And keep in mind that this type of welfare is only one type of assistance that comes from the state. And in terms of taking care of kids and those that are truly in need, there are many, many programs that remain, Medicaid and others, that go far beyond the federal requirements and taking care of those that are truly in need. But our real focus is not on how do we help people pay the bills when they don't have a job, and instead, how do we create the right environment where they can get a job? Because really, at the end of the day, our philosophy is the best social program ever invented is a job, and that's what we need more of. And so our focus is just relentlessly toward creating the environment where people who want to work can work, and that really takes care of a lot of these other problems. So instead of trying to figure out how we can pay to keep people on welfare for their entire lifetimes, let's find out how we can get people prepared for the jobs of this century and make sure that those jobs are available when they need them.
The governor, you, the administration, what is the plan to create jobs in the fourth quarter here in the state of Michigan?
Well, we need to really look at things from a long-term standpoint of changing the environment such that entrepreneurs can be successful and take risks again, because those are the ones who actually make the jobs. And so we started with the tax reforms. Now, the tax reforms don't actually take effect until January 1st, keep in mind. So we're not seeing any impact of them quite yet, but you do see a change in attitude because these things are coming up. And I've been from top to bottom of the state, and you see a lot of optimism, a lot of plans that are being laid right now. So our goal as state government is not to direct the economy where it's supposed to go, but rather create an environment for job growth so that those who have ideas that they can turn into jobs that they go ahead and start pulling the trigger on these plans that have been on the sidelines for so long. So it's not the sort of thing we can get out of overnight, but it is the sort of thing that that we can do better, and we must do better on.
All right, talk about the limits that have been placed on insurance for state workers.
There have there has been discussion over the course of the last several years, and how do we put or keep get control of the rising health care costs that taxpayers have to pay for those of us who are in the public sector. And while some, like the governor and I, have been paying 20% of our premiums right along, that there's not a practice that's been in place over much of the public sector. And so what we had proposed to do as part of the budget incentives, and what the legislature just passed a bill for, is to require that those of us in the public sector pay 20% of our premiums. And that's something that's more generous than what the private sector does on average today, and something a very reasonable reform that will have long-term implications on our ability to provide services in a much more efficient fashion. And this is just one of those changes that's necessary in the reinvention process.
All right, final question for you. I've got about a minute later. Just wanted to get your reaction to the court ruling about medical marijuana in the state of Michigan.
I'm not particularly surprised by it. The original proposal that was on the ballot was very, very broadly written, such that it didn't provide much guidance for how the dispensing of medical marijuana would work. And I think most objective people would look at the system and say that, yeah, it looked like it was getting out of hand awful quick. But I think that it was written broadly enough in the first place that it was destined for the court to fill in the blanks. And we're just seeing that process unfold now.
We've been talking with Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly. I know you've got a crazy day ahead of you. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Hey, my pleasure, Tony. I'll talk to you later.